RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With MasterClass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch MasterClass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. masterclass.com/audio.
Good morning, golfers. Your tee time awaits. It's the Tee to Green Golf Show here on WGR Sports Radio 550. Got a thought on the PGA Tour? Want help with your swing? Give the show a call at 803-0550.
Tee to Green is being presented by the Western New York PGA. Woods to wedges inside the Whirly Golf Dome. Custom Turf, Michelob Ultra, and Jim Beam. And by our home clubs, Tantera Golf Club, Briarwood Country Club, and Lancaster Country Club.
A hole in one, not bad.
Now it's time to talk golf. Here are your hosts, Brian Cozio, Kevin Sylvester, and PGA Pro Jeff Mitis.
Good morning, everybody, here on another Saturday morning on WGR. It is the Tee to Green Golf Show, your local spot for golf here in Western New York. I'm Brian Colzio, along with Kevin Sylvester and PGA Pro Jeff Mitis, as we are back here for another week. And we got a jam-packed show here coming up. The PGA Tour, just within the last few days, announcing a newly revamped schedule. We'll go over that. We've got Jeff's Western New York PGA Tip of the Week coming up. And also, excited, another PGA Tour player. Yeah, we're going to hear from him. Kevin got a chance to, just a few days ago, catch up with John Rollins. So we'll have all that and more here, our normal features on Tee to Green as we roll on here over the course of the next hour. As we say good morning to both of you, Kevin, morning, and look forward to hearing your interview coming up with John Rollins.
Yeah, John is Rocket, likes to be called. So great guy. I first met him at the John Deere Classic a few years ago, and then we ended up working together. He works, so we have a couple guys we work with on PGA Tour Radio. Mark Wilson, another one who we'll get on here in the coming weeks, that play and that also commentate. So he's got the perspective of both player and announcer. So I think people will enjoy the conversation with Rocket John Rollins.
That's right. Jeff, good morning. Another week here with whether the courses were open or not, this might have not have been an easy week for us to play. There's snow on the ground here as a re-record this remotely here from our homes. At least there is in my backyard at the moment.
Yep, I got some too. And it hasn't been great. It looks like I'm starting to feel like we might see, see the PGA Tour make that schedule. You know, at least that gives you a target date. And I was surprised to see they put out a schedule. It seems like you'd have to deal with a lot of municipalities and states and everything else to get the okay for something like that, but that's certainly exciting to, that gives you a little positive boost here, and next week hopefully will be sunny. And on the 29th, I guess hopefully the golf courses will be able to open again. So we're every day we're getting a little closer to getting through this whole thing. And taking it one day at a time to see what it's going to be like in a couple months. I don't know, but I know we're getting closer to the end. We're closer to the end, I feel, than we were at this time last week, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know that when we recorded last week, we kind of unfortunately ended with the negative news that golf courses in New York were deemed not as essential business by Governor Cuomo. But we have been getting good news, not only in New York, but nationally. And with the PGA Tour revamped schedule, other sports starting to maybe line things up, it does seem positive. And you're right, let's all hope that maybe on April 29th, when the non-essential business things get re-looked at again, that golf courses will be back open. You mentioned the schedule here. Let's get our check of the PGA Tour leaderboard brought to you by Callaway Chrome Soft. This ball is different, and also by Puma Golf Shoes. Obviously, no leaderboard to look at, but let's take a look at that revamped schedule. And Kevin, it's going to start in Texas at the Colonial. June 11th is when round one is scheduled to begin. The first four events are scheduled without spectators. Obviously, going forward, it's kind of a let's see how it plays out sort of thing from the PGA Tour. But at least for the first month of scheduling of events, there'll be no spectators allowed. And I, you know, would think that they'll see kind of how it plays out. We obviously learn new things every day. So to know whether spectators will be there or not be able to be there, that's something you can't answer right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, that makes sense. First of all, what's going on with the country, you know, I'll be honest, we had a conference call the other day amongst us on course rovers, roving announcers, and you know, we don't know what it's going to look like as far as on the course, you know, and I'll just say broadcast personnel overall, but there will be some production to it because they're going to want to televise us, of course. One of the reasons why and the tour, they put out a memo to all those contractors, and they also had a release to the media, and several times it stated in that the safety of their players and personnel are of the utmost importance. So this is all going to be fluid, I think. But here's the key. They had to put the schedule out in order for players to make plans to get back into the country if need be, figure out how they're going to get there travel-wise to play in the events. The other thing is Charles Schwab Cup Challenge was an invitational, limited field. They're increasing the number of players in that field. Same with Memorial. The Memorial is going to be played in July in Columbus, Ohio. Or actually, no, I think it's a part of that first four.
You're right. July 13th through the 19th is
okay.
Memorial.
That was normally a limited field event also, elevated status. They're going to increase the number of players for that event too. Same thing with the FedEx Cup St. Jude. Essentially going from 120 to 144 players, some 150 players, to give more playing opportunities because of the lower number of events.
Yeah, it's all good news. You know, I think, as you said, Kevin, it's just about at least we're making plans. You know, we're planning for the future, which is the positive sign here. And that's what I see. If the first event or the second event doesn't come off, or one of those municipalities or one of those states is having a problem, we can deal with that then. But right now, hey, like you said, we talked about it last week. You got to be able to plan as a player. You got to be able to prepare. The players aren't sitting at home just smashing balls all day because they got to pace themselves. They got, you know, they got to ramp up, you know, they're going to get in shape and stuff like that. But they're going to be, now that they have something in their sights, then now they can start preparing, know what golf courses they're playing, where they're going, everything else. That's what's important.
Yeah. The other thing that tour did, Canadian Open's canceled, just outright canceled. That won't be rescheduled. The Greenbrier is gone because they also announced the start of the next season, which will start with the Safeway Open, as it traditionally does. So they have the start of the next season with the U.S. Open, Ryder Cup, and Masters all involved in it. But the schedule is going to go into, I think, the first week of December and end with the Mayakoba Classic in Mexico. So that's going to be essentially about a month later. And then the Hero Challenge in the Bahamas is what the schedule looks like. So I think that was the other part of the schedule, too, is like, hey, when's next year start? And the interesting thing is the Masters, I think, is going to count twice. And the FedEx Cup standings for the following season, which should be pretty interesting.
Because there'll be two Masters, because there'll be two events, right? In the fall and in the spring.
Yeah. I mean, right, the Masters are going to go back to April, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. As long as they're able to get it in November, I would assume that they're going to, you know, keep their normal first full week in April kind of locked in like they normally would.
If they didn't, it's bad marketing. Yeah. Somebody in their marketing department should be fired. Yeah.
So. Hey, let me say this other thing about fans, not having fans at the first four. It also relieves the pressure of setting up stands, volunteers. Like, overall, it's less people that are there and have to work in preparation and exposure leading up to it. So it's not just about
concessions.
Concessions, merchandise, course board hospitality, all that. Yeah,
that's correct. It's not just about having fans at the golf course. It's all that goes into it. And frankly, it probably relieves some people's anxiety about, oh, we got to help this event. Do I want to go back? Like, it takes some of that pressure off, I believe. My opinion.
Yeah.
And I think it affects golfers less than NFLers or NHLers or NBAers because, you know, even as a tour player, you're not always getting followed by huge crowds. If you got an early Thursday time of number 10, you're not always having a big group follow you. So you're still playing and you're chatting with your fellow competitors. And that's what we miss as golfers. You know, you miss being out there with your buds and the challenge of the game. So they'll still have that. And I don't think it'll affect play much, you know, the quality of play. So I think it'll be a good thing. And it may work better on TV, not having to worry about the fans and working around them and your camera angles and more, you know, all those things may work great.
You know, it's going to be interesting. I can imagine they may not have marshals out there, right? If you're not going to volunteer on the golf course. So those errant tee shots, they're going to play like us. Got to find it.
That's right. You might see different club selection because of that, knowing they don't have an automatic ball finder kind of down there for marshalling. That's right. Just a few minutes left here on our opening segment on Tee to Green. Brian Colziel, Kevin Sylvester, PGA Pro Jeff Mitis. Don't forget, coming up in a few minutes, Kevin's conversation with PGA Tour player John Rollins. And then we'll be back in the third segment for our Western New York PGA Tip of the Week. I want to mention one thing here in our last 2 minutes. I watched the replay of Tiger's 2019 win of the Masters on Sunday. And I want to make one point. I thought, by the way, Phil, and this isn't surprising, I thought Phil was very good on Saturday with him and Nance, kind of how they voiced over some of the action. Tiger seemed a little less enthusiastic as Phil, not surprising, but here's what I loved about Tiger. He's talking about how he's on the 11th hole, yet he said while he was waiting to hit his shot, he was watching Koepka on 12 go into the water, and he goes, I knew Brooks was going to hit a 9-iron on that hole. And then he said with the wind, and he goes, then when we came up to my group, because he of course was with Molinari and Finau, he goes, Molinari went into the water, he goes, and I knew he hit an 8. He goes, it reaffirmed my decision of what club to hit, and obviously Woods landed safely, perfectly right in the middle of the green. And the fact that he was watching someone else on the hole ahead of him while preparing for his next shot on 11, the approach, watching Koepka on 12, knowing exactly what club he would have been using, and then confirming it with Molinari's decision and his result. Like, I just thought, Jeff, that is maybe what shows what a PGA Tour player is capable of, but also maybe what separates Tiger from even some of the other best, of just how he's able to do all of that while he's still concentrating on his own game.
You know, I think, I don't know that that's so unique to Tiger, to be honest, because even as part of college golf, you know, you get to the next tee, you have the ability to ask your teammate, you know, what club you hit, what, you know, and you're sitting there on the tee always, you're always watching players hit, and you kind of know what they're hitting. And so he said, I remember that comment too, because I followed that, and it was interesting, he said, because he knew above the trees, because you couldn't feel it. And so when that ball got above those trees, it was knocking it down. I think he ended up controlling his flight a little, and it helped him pick the club. So, yeah, I think a lot of players are doing that. I just think Tiger's done it better than anybody ever, and that's where he's the strongest in the world, and he can take that and use it to his advantage every time.
Absolutely. Okay, we got to take a break here on Tee to Green. Brian Colziel, Kevin Sylvester, PGA Pro Jeff Mitis. When we come back, we will have Kevin's interview with PGA Tour player John Rollins. So good stuff. Looking forward to hearing that interview. And then we'll be back in a little bit. We'll get Jeff's Western New York PGA Tip of the Week. Thanks for listening to Tee to Green. More coming up, including the interview with John Rollins next, right here on Tee to Green on WGR.
on Tee to Green, as we've been doing here during the COVID-19 quarantine. It's given me a great opportunity to reach out to some folks I work with, some PGA Tour players, and this guy fits both categories. It is three-time PGA Tour winner John Rollins, whom I work with on PGA Tour Radio. Hey, John, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, Kevin, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you, A, because I don't think we've talked since working Hawaii way back, which seems forever ago, doesn't it? I mean, it seems so long ago.
It's crazy, like you said, to think about how long ago that seems. But, you know, honestly, it was just a little over a few months ago. We were there and kind of calling the action. So it's good to hear from you again, though.
Yeah, good to hear from you, too. You're doing well? You and your family are doing well during this whole COVID thing?
Yeah, everybody's still in pretty good spirits. We're doing pretty well and really just taking it one day at a time. You know, really, like, it's really all you can do is just kind of sit back and try to make the most of it. I would say I've become, out of this this quarantine or shelter in place, whatever you want to call it, I feel like I've become a pretty good laundryman. I've become a pretty good gardener now. I've enhanced my skills as a wine aficionado or connoisseur, whatever words you like to choose. And, you know, just learning all sorts of new things around the house and ways to kind of entertain myself.
All right. You know what? I'm going to dive into that before we talk about golf. Let's talk about wine. So what have you learned about wine? What has made you a better a wine connoisseur?
Well, I hate to say it's because I've had to partake in as many bottles as I've had throughout this process. But, wine has always been something that my wife and I have enjoyed it a long time. We actually went to Napa Valley on our honeymoon way back in 2005. And, from that point on, we've just really enjoyed it. And it's a lot of fun, especially when you can, you know, when you learn about it and when you can share good or great bottles with friends and family. And just, you know, it's something that, again, that we really had a passion about for a while now. And we enjoyed a nice 2001 Opus One the other day, and it was just sort of one of those times where we just thought it was time to open something nice. You know, there's times in your cellar that a wine needs to be opened, it needs to be enjoyed before, you know, you potentially lose its, you know, its peak performance. I think that probably could have stayed a little bit longer, but, you know, it was just the timing felt right, and we wanted to really sit back and just kind of enjoy the time here together and at home and you know, with one another and really enjoyed that bottle. But again, it's just something that's a lot of fun and we really loved over the last, you know, whatever, 15 years or so that we've been married.
Well, you know, it's good for you guys to say, hey, let's open this up and enjoy it. My wife and I have done the same. There was a bottle of red that we were saving, and we're like, well, what are we saving it for? Let's enjoy. Like, now's the time here. Like, we're not rushed. We don't have to bring it anywhere. We can sit, sip, and enjoy it ourselves. And I have done the same thing with a couple of bottle of bourbons that I've been holding back on. I'm like, you know what? What am I saving this stuff for? Let's live.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can't take it with you. You know, when you're gone, you can't take it with you. And, you know, as you say, you might as well enjoy it. You have those things for a reason. And you know, it's nice if you have the patience to let it mature and let it develop, you know, the way that it can, you know, that's a pretty cool thing then to be able to, you know, to open it and enjoy it, as you said. But you're exactly right. You have to live. You have to enjoy every moment, you know, as they come. Because, I mean, my goodness, look at the situation we're in now. Who would have ever thought we'd all be kind of doing everything from our home as long as we've been doing this?
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, no one saw this coming for sure. Let's talk about something you probably saw coming on your plane: victories. And you've got three of them. The Canadian Open in 2002, the BC Open in 2006, and the Reno Tahoe Open in 2009. Oddly enough, I didn't realize this. You know, your first two victories, not far from where I'm at right now. You won the BC Open when it was played at Turning Stone Resort in Syracuse, and the Canadian Open right when it was in Toronto.
Yeah, I never really thought about that. But, you know, maybe it was destined that we met and began to work together. And, you know, it was just in the cards. I just didn't see it back at that time.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've never even been to Turning Stone, which sounds stupid. It's only two hours away, maybe 2.5 hours away for me. And I've always one of those places where I want to go and play. And I believe, was that the first year that it moved there because of the floods in Endicott, New York?
Yes.
It was. Okay. So you'd never seen the golf course before.
No, never. You know, we were kind of, as players, we were honestly a little concerned that, you know, they weren't even going to have the tournament at the time because, like you said, the floods there in Endicott, Enjoy Golf Club just, you know, was unplayable, no way to do that. And then the people at Turning Stone sort of stepped up at the last minute and, you know, said, we can host this event and we'd love to had the PGA Tour come in and really get the exposure that, you know, it gave the resort, for them that week and put on a spectacular tournament. Obviously, I'm a little biased of it because I came out victorious that year. But, I mean, it was a beautiful property, great golf course. It had everybody stayed there on site, the casino and all. So it ended up being a good week for all.
Yeah, and I think Tiger went on to have a skins game there, and Noto Begay held a charity event there also at the Turning Stone Resort. But I want to go back to your first win at the Canadian Open, and you won that in a playoff. You beat Neil Lancaster and Justin Leonard in a playoff. And you've been in three playoffs in your career. That was the – I'm going to say this. It sounds terrible, John. That was the only win. no, but you lost
it. No, hey, that's all right.
No, but what I want you to do is if you can kind of describe to our listeners, the amateurs out there who've maybe never been in a playoff, even at their club, what it's like to make it through 72 holes and then go to a sudden-death playoff.
Well, this was an unusual set of circumstances, I would say, probably more of a funny story related to it than anything else. And, you know, we would have to rewind to the 18th hole in regulation. I had finished well before Neil Lancaster, that playing in the final group, who was leading going into the final round. I had finished, a good 45 minutes, maybe close, I'd say somewhere in the 45 minutes to an hour range ahead of him, and had posted 16 under par, along with Justin Leonard, who, you know, finished kind of in between Neil Lancaster and myself. And I'm just kind of hanging out waiting, and Neil Lancaster's got a two-shot lead going into the last hole, and he hits it in the middle of the fairway. And I'm sort of standing behind the 18th green, just watching. I mean, I'm, again, my second year on the PGA Tour. I'm like a kid in a candy shop. I've got a chance, you know, I'm thinking I've got a chance to maybe, you never know what'll happen, but it's just you don't think when he's in the middle of the fairway you've got any business or any chance of a playoff. Well, he proceeds to hit a poor shot left of the green, dumps it in the bunker, blasts it out, misses a putt. He makes a terrible double bogey on the last hole and lets Justin Leonard and I end this playoff. And all of a sudden my mind went from, you know, I'm two shots back, I'm going to finish, you know, the best finish I've had on the PGA Tour in my career, currently tied for second, to, oh my God, I'm in a playoff. Where's my caddy and my golf clubs? And, you know, I run around to the front of the club. He's kind of hanging out there. You know, we're waiting to see what happens. We rush to the tee, haven't really hit any golf balls, haven't done anything, get to the tee. Neil Lancaster walks up on the 18th tee after signing his scorecard and shakes Justin Leonard in my hand. And while he does that, his comment to us both is, "You're welcome. You're welcome." Oh. And you got to kind of laugh when a guy comes up and does that. It still has the humor that Neil Lancaster has there on the 18th hole. And we play the 18th in the first sudden death hole, and I hit two shots up on the green, 25 feet or so from for birdie. They both go on and make pars, and then I drain the 25-foot birdie putt, and just, I mean, what a feeling. It honestly, Kevin, happened so fast that I really didn't have time to process what was going on. And I would have to say, at that stage of my career, it's probably a blessing, you know, that I was, that it happened that quickly. You know, if I'd have had time to really think about it, who knows what the outcome would have been. But because of the way it all transpired and unfolded, it was just such a cool experience. Obviously one that I'll never forget, but you know, to me, it's more of a comedy story behind it with the reaction from Neil Lancaster.
So having, you know, first of all, that was at Glen Abbey, right?
That was at Angus Glen.
Angus Glen. Okay. All right. The other one, because I was thinking of Glen Abbey where they traditionally held it.
There's a lot of Glens and A's and G's and A's and all to be yes. confused, but it was Angus Glen.
I remember, I was supposed to play in the media week that year. They had a media event, and I couldn't make it up to play. Now I wish I had. I remember Steve Wheatcroft, when Johnny Vegas won several years back at Glen Abbey, Wheatcroft had it in the bag. I shouldn't say had it in the bag. I mean, this is where anything can happen. It was similar to what you're talking about with Neil Lancaster, where he put it in the bunker, and then he bladed one over the green into the water near the scoreboard, and I just felt so terrible for him because this was going to be a defining moment for Steve Wheatcroft, and it just went away, and it's just how anything can happen, and you benefited from anything happening at that event. But I wanted to ask, so the following year, you made the playoff in the Buick Classic, Jonathan Kay won. But did it make you less nervous? Did it, like, what did having been through a playoff and winning, how did that help you handle entering a playoff again?
Yeah, I think that it definitely helped. You know, that year at Westchester, I loved Westchester Country Club, still do. I hadn't been up there since the tour stopped playing, but always loved playing there. And, you know, just one of those style golf courses that I enjoyed playing. And you know, that year that Jonathan Kay, as you just said, got me in the playoff. I mean, I played some great golf, and in that playoff, I think I was, even though I had already won the previous year in a playoff, I felt much more nervous, to be honest, in that situation. But again, I think it comes back to I had more. It was more real time. Happening. I was, you know, I played well. I was like in the maybe next to last. I can't remember what grouping I was on the final round. So I was really under the pressure all day. And then going into the playoff, it was just a quick sort of turnaround. We signed our cards. You know, JK and I are in the playoff and go back to 18. So, you know, I really felt all of the nerves associated in that moment, unlike I feel like I did in the Canadian Open the year before. So not to say that I lost the playoff because I felt more nervous. I mean, Jonathan Kay, I remember the play. I hit my tee shot just up the left side in the rough and had to lay up, and he knocked it up, I think, either on the green or just around the green with a pretty easy up and down. And I had to lay up and hit a very mediocre wedge shot and was unable to make birdie. And, you know, he either chipped it really close or maybe even lagged it really close and, you know, made his birdie that way. So, I mean, he played a perfect hole in that situation. So again, I think the nerves were a little more intense, or at least I felt them more in that playoff than I did the year before.
Before we get into broadcasting and what's going on now in professional golf, I think we talked about this when we were hanging out, but maybe not. Injuries, did you experience? I mean, it seems to me every professional golfer experienced some injuries, and it's so tough to maintain all that needs to be maintained to compete and win on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And fortunately, knock on wood for me, I've never had any substantial injuries. I mean, you know, yes, you've had moments where your back is tight or, you know, things associated like that, but I've had one little left shoulder episode that, you know, I had to have some treatment done on it, and no surgeries, no any sort of like medical extensions that I've needed to receive throughout my career. So I've been very, very fortunate that my body has held up and has given me the opportunity to play really a injury-free career.
Now, I mean, you're still have some status on the tour. You can still play. Still go to Monday qualifiers and such. So it's kind of, I mean, nobody's playing right now, obviously, but kind of talk about your playing opportunities you have, assuming we get back in a month or so here, and how you look at playing opportunities right now.
Well, you know, it's a bit unique or different, I guess, in the approach. I mean, it's nobody knows what's going to happen once we get started, when we ever get started again. You know, I think that when that time comes, the fields are going to be stronger than ever because everybody's on the shelf right now. So when these guys get the opportunity to play, you know, tournaments they ordinarily may not play, I think are really going to see an increase or a bump in the strength of their fields just because guys are going to want to get back at it. I mean, guys have been sitting at home now for, you know, a couple of months, not with anything to do. And, you know, they're ready to get back into competitive golf as we're ready to see competitive golf and call competitive golf. But, you know, as far as playing opportunities, I was probably going to play the Dominican Republic before things got put on the shelf, maybe having, you know, have an opportunity to go qualify for San Antonio, you know, look down the road, you kind of think maybe John Deere, Barbasol, obviously the event at the Reno Tahoe area there that's moved now, I believe, into the Truckee, California area. So, you know, there were some opportunities that I was looking forward to, trying to keep my game in shape the best I can. But, you know, when this starts back up again, who knows what to expect and who knows where the opportunities will fall. I've tried to keep my body moving and hitting golf balls into a net here at the house. I'm really looking forward to hitting off some natural turf again. I can be honest with you there, seeing the ball roll on the green. But, you know, you have to do whatever you can. I mean, you have to adapt, you have to adjust. And that's what really everyone's doing in this this time.
Well, speaking of adapting and adjusting, you've adapted and adjusted to your role as a broadcaster with PGA Tour Live and with PGA Tour Radio. Talk to me how that came about and how you think you're doing. I'll tell you how I'll tell you afterwards when you tell me how you think you're doing. I'll tell you how I think you're doing.
Okay. Well, I can't wait for the criticism. This is going to be great. But again, as you said, I'm playing under limited status. I'm playing out of a past champions category, and we get reshuffled around based on your performance in the tournaments you get to play in and, you know, things of that nature that can open a few extra doors. But honestly, after I lost my full status after the 2014 season, 2015 I still played enough golf, you know, but I didn't play that well. I played okay at times, but nothing great. Still was in that same boat as the past champion, and I've been in that category really ever since. So because of that, you know, with the limited opportunities, I mean, going from a full-time player playing 25 to 28 tournaments a year to now, you know, maybe getting 5 to 7, you know, maybe 8 if you, things are good. It's just hard to really say. There's no consistency in scheduling. You got to start looking at, okay, well, what other options do I have? What do I think I could do? What would I like to do? And, you know, I went to school, oddly enough, at Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia, to major in mass communications broadcasting. Now, unfortunately, I never got far enough down the line, you know, because I pursued my professional career, but that was my focus. That was kind of what I thought I'd like to do. So, oddly enough, I end up looking into PGA Radio, PGA Tour Live, some golf channel thing. I just make some phone calls and I talk to Dave Logue and, you know, mention my, you know, again, talk about my interest in it. And he gave me an opportunity and I've really enjoyed it. It's been a new perspective for me. I still think that I'm learning. And I think I honestly have a lot still to learn. I've enjoyed it. I feel like I do a pretty good job, you know, offering a player perspective. But I do think that I could maybe offer up a little bit more. I've been a couple of years now, and I think that I'm still kind of learning. I think I'm walking the thin line, to be honest with you, on being a player and maybe walking down the fairways with guys and yet calling the action and maybe calling some players out or calling situations out on the radio and maybe fear or just sort of like hesitation of, well, I'm not going to rake that guy over the coals just yet because I may walk down the fairway next week with him, and I don't really want to answer all those questions. You know, so that, that's sort of the juggling act that I think that I'm in right now, but I'm leaning a little bit more towards not really worrying about that and really trying to focus when I'm in the studio, when I'm calling the shots and calling the action, of really giving that player perspective, not worrying about what's said and what isn't said, and just try to deliver the best product I can. But I've enjoyed it. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, well said, all the way around there. And I think you do a great job of keeping it simple and explaining what the player either was trying to do or was thinking about in a shot, because there's it can be so technical and all of the elements that go into a shot. And I personally enjoy just picking your brain on, you know, hey, this is how I, you know, from watching players up close doing it and being, you know, whatever, a decent amateur golfer, club golfer, on how I would kind of approach things. And I think you've done a nice job of simplifying those things so the listeners, the golfers, because most people who listen to it are golfers, that they can understand what's going on.
Well, I appreciate that. I have received a great outpouring of support, you know, from other players, from caddies, from friends that I've met through the years, obviously family, friends here at home, you know, people that have listened that you know, commend me and say, hey, enjoyed the broadcast. You know, you sound great. You're doing a good job, all these things. So that's been really, you know, really great to receive that sort of support. And I think to touch on that, what you just said, I think that really is a reflection of the type of player that I was. I was very simple. I saw it. I reacted to the shot. You know, there wasn't a lot of technical, mechanical, you know, overthinking, overanalyzing, or any of that sort of stuff. So my guess is that's what, you know, translates, you know, on the broadcast is really me as a player, very simple. So me as a broadcaster, I can't change, you know, recreate the wheel. I am who I am, and that's what I do.
How many times has our friend Ed McLaughlin hit you up for money for VCU?
You know, he is great. He has been, you know, awesome for the school, and we went. I actually took my wife and daughter last year. We were in Richmond visiting my family, who all is still there in Richmond area, and I took them down to campus. It's changed an enormous amount since 1997 or 93 to 97 when I was there. And, you know, I sit back and think, man, I wish I had all of this stuff here when I was in college. I mean, you know, it would have been unbelievable. But he's been great for the university and for the campus and really for all the students and all. But I've been pretty fortunate. He's taken it easy on me and just kind of let me do what I do and everything. But he and I, we talk, you know, I'm not going to say all the time, but we text quite frequently on things, you know, maybe related to the golf team or just some things, some events that they're trying to, you know, put together for some alum and help raise money, things like that. So he hadn't put the full court press on me yet.
I don't know that. Did I mention that? Like, so I knew Ed when he was at Niagara, and I used to announce some games, and we sat on a committee together. He's a fantastic guy. So I kind of threw that question at you, but I'm not sure I even told you that I knew Ed.
Well, no, I think it was either the last time, I can't remember what it was, but either you or Ed, one of you guys messaged me and said to say something to the other guy, and that's where I put it together on, you know, you guys knew each other and, you know, kind of got the whole background of all that. But yeah, no, that I knew you guys were familiar with one another, and yeah, but that's all good.
Yeah, great guy. I'm happy for success. Hey,
small world.
Yeah, it certainly is. Final thing, and maybe this might be unfair to do, but a prediction on when we get back to PGA Tour golf, with or without fans. Do you have a prediction for us?
Well, I do predict that we will get back without fans before fans. I do see, and I mean, again, these are my opinions and predictions, but I do think that, you know, based on just some kind of rumors and rumblings and all going around in different, you know, areas of the country and all, and trying to get the economy and the world sort of open back up, you know, little by little, I do think that we're going to see sports open back up without fans in the beginning. You know, we're going to see the NBA and MLB and, you know, all that sort of stuff kind of come back into play. And I think without fans, so golf, I believe, will follow suit. I could be totally off base, but I think that, you know, in an effort, maybe whether you call it a trial run or not, I don't really know. I mean, a PGA Tour event shouldn't be a trial effort, but I do think that they're going to want to get back out and play and give the fans something to follow and to cheer about and, you know, really energize everybody again about being out playing live golf and PGA Tour golf especially. So when do I think that will happen? Oh, man, you know, I don't really see it happening until at least the beginning to middle part of June is my earliest guess. I mean, I know that technically we're looking at potentially the Charles Schwab Challenge here in Fort Worth at Colonial, but I don't see how the tour is going to have enough time to give the players, to give the sponsor, just to really give the facility the proper time to get things prepared and set up and kind of figure out how they're going to navigate these things and the different issues that now are going to be confronted to the facilities and the tournaments after this COVID-19 pandemic. So I just, you know, I would think that giving them another good month and a half to almost 2 months of time to really prepare for all of that and kind of figure it out seems to make the most sense. But again, I could be totally off base, but that's sort of my prediction now. It's the beginning to middle part of June.
Yeah, it sounds like it's headed that way too, and hopefully they get all together. John, I really appreciate your time for joining us on the show. All the best to you and your family, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Yeah, absolutely, Kevin. Thank you very much. Had a great time, and I'd like to look forward to calling some shots with you here soon.
All right, we'll be back with more of TD Green coming up here on WGR.
Back on TD Green, big thanks again to John Rollins, PGA Tour player, one of my colleagues on PGA Tour Radio. Also, big thanks to a couple of our sponsors in these tough times, standing by us here at TD Green and standing by you, One Scroy Financial, the locally family-owned financial planning firm. They've been helping Western New Yorkers since 1971 with these interesting times, especially financially. Get some help. Give them a call at 716-674-6700. That's 674-6700. Or go to scroyfinancial.com. That's S-G-R-O-I financial.com. And the Jumpa agency with Allstate. Allstate did a great thing and rebated some money to their owners. So see my friend Frank Jumpa and the Jumpa agency for your insurance needs.
Back here on Tee to Green, our final segment. Thanks for being with us. Brian Colziel, Kevin Sylvester, PGA Pro, Jeff Mitas. Our Ryder Cup report brought to you by New Era Cap, the official cap of the USA Ryder Cup team. Speaking of the Ryder Cup, with that new schedule that we newly revamped schedule that we mentioned last segment, the US Open and the Ryder Cup, Jeff, will go in back-to-back weeks. The US Open scheduled for the 17th through the 20th, and then the Ryder Cup the following week, the 25th. Through the 27th. So that's back-to-back monster events right there.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Those guys are going to be tired. This is going to be a long stretch of golf for a lot of them. You know, they took some time off. They got to get their point. They got to work. And the schedule's compact in the fall with the majors. So that'll be a lot of fun to see. You know, it's emotionally draining to compete. You know, it's emotionally draining to compete. But imagine competing in the U.S. Open and trying to win it over the weekend. You're beat on Monday morning or Sunday night. And then to go to the Ryder Cup, you know, that'll give you that infusion of adrenaline to get you going through. Those guys can be tired after 2 weeks of back-to-back golf like that.
Absolutely. All right, let's get to our PGA Tour Champions report brought to you by Donald Ross, the official clothing here of all of us on Tee to Green. No official announcement yet in terms of what the schedule might look like for the PGA Tour Champions. I think right now the PGA Tour is trying to get the PGA Tour set, and just a couple of tweets I saw from a couple of the reporters that follow the Champions Tour said that they're hoping to maybe announce something over the course of the next week or so. So maybe next week we'll actually have some events to talk about there. All right, let's finish with our Western New York PGA Tip of the Week brought to you by the Western New York PGA. And Jeff, we want to talk about a little golf psychology, in between the ears, the mental approach to golf here. What are some keys you think are important in that aspect?
You know, this is a good time to do it because we're kind of confined to our house. You know, I think good players approach the game mentally properly. You know, there's a book out there I suggest everybody read. Dr. Bob Rotella wrote a book called Golf is Not a Game of Perfect. It's kind of the core concepts of how the mental game is played. You know, you watch good players. One of the parts of it is a pre-shot routine. Making something routine makes it easy. There's a lot of different things you can do. You can visualize shots. You know, good players are always visualizing shots. These are things you can do at home. I was reminded of this week. They had a girl from, I think she finished second in the Augusta Women's Amateur. And her quote was, not all wins give you trophies. But she had learned so much from coming in second and losing on the last hole there that it was a great mental, you know, block for her to get over and become a good player. And I don't think you see good players who don't have good mental attitudes. Doesn't mean you don't get mad. It doesn't mean you don't get frustrated. It doesn't mean you have bad days. But that consistent mental positive outlook to the game and constantly building is what makes it separates players. So if you're a player who actually wants to be very good, you should really, really look at how you're thinking the game and what you're doing on the mental side of the game to get better.
You know,
I think. Go ahead, Kev.
I was going to say, you know, along those lines, Jeff, this is something I started doing 2 years ago, and I think it's really helped me. I wrote down the golf courses I played the most, and I'd go through hole by hole, and I'd write down the textbook way, it's in a little notebook, of how I would play the hole, meaning these are my club options off the tee. Some holes are just, it's automatic driver. I would only put two options down on each hole. And so sometimes in tournaments, I'd go through the book and I have one player, what are you doing? I'm looking at my book. Like, what do you mean your book? I'm looking at my book. It tells me how to play the hole. What do you mean how to play the hole? Some holes.
You planned your work. Yeah, you went in with a plan. That's what
yes.
you want to do.
Yeah.
And what I would also say real quick is also visualize the best shot you ever saw hit on that hole. Do you remember your best drive on the eighth hole at, you know, wherever, or the ninth hole at Lancaster. Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
And I would encourage everybody to do that. Just, you know, if you play at Lancaster Country Club, one of our home courses, you know, chart every hole because you can play several of those holes off the tee completely different every time you go. 18, for example, you can hit a 7-iron to driver on that hole and play it well and put yourself in position to play birdie. So I would definitely recommend doing that no matter what your course. If you're a Tantera, Brian, I'm sure there's some holes that you're like, this is either a hybrid or driver or 5-iron. Like, write it down the plan.
Yeah. One thing that I feel like I've been really trying to improve upon, like it's been a personal goal of mine, is to just let a bad shot go. Sometimes I will think about it as, you know, oh, if I would have just hit that shot differently 2 holes ago or 3 holes ago, or even, you know, or even the course while I'm putting, I'm thinking like, oh man, this should have been a birdie putt. Instead, it's a bogey putt. Like, just, you know, I feel like letting a shot go is something that I know used to bother me. And I think it's definitely something that I know that I feel like I've been improving upon. I know I got to keep going forward with that, but
you need to do that. So you're completely engaged in the shot you're currently hitting. That's, you know, so what you're doing there is great. Yeah, just anything you can do to get yourself in that little bubble. The analogy I always use is a free throw shooter. Always got a routine. You don't see a good free throw shooter without a routine. Same thing you're doing, Brian. If you can get rid of that, whatever happened on that last shot, mentally cleanse yourself, just let it go. You're going to play much better, much better.
Absolutely. All right, let's finish with this thought on a nice lighter note. Players have been being interviewed, of course, as we had John Rollins earlier, but just about what they've been doing right now, staying at home and quarantine. A reporter this week interviewed Dustin Johnson about just what he's doing at home, and then they asked him about what he's been doing to stay in shape, and he says, well, I have the DJ diet. And the reporter followed up, well, what's the DJ diet? And here's a great quote. And I think it's something that all of us here at Tee to Green, we already are on this diet. Here's the quote. It says, quote, I've never counted calories. If I'm hungry, I eat until I'm not hungry anymore. Then I stop. That's the DJ diet.
See, but he stops. That's where you're different. That's where we're different.
Kev, I think you and I are really good at this diet already, right? We follow this all the time.
Yeah, I need to hit the brake. A little bit. Although it's interesting, I've eaten more carbs during quarantine, but I think because I'm not eating out as much, most of my clothes still fit me. I mean, it's probably a couple pounds I've gained, but not nearly what it should be.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely less takeout, no doubt. Okay, guys, thanks so much, and we'll do it again next week. Don't forget, you can check out extra features, Tea to Green Extra, videos, podcasts, at our website, T2Green.golf. And we thank everybody for listening here. For PGA Pro Jeff Mitis and Kevin Sylvester, I'm Brian Colziel. Have a great week, everybody. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we appreciate you being with us. And for producer Derek Kramer, you've been listening to Tea to Green, presented by the Western New York PGA, Woods to Wedges inside the Whirly Golf Dome, Michelob Ultra, Custom Turf, Jim Beam, and our home clubs, Tantera, Briarwood, and Lancaster Country Club. We'll talk to you next week right here on Tea to Green.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With MasterClass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch MasterClass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. masterclass.com/audio. This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.